I got a simple question this morning. It's not necessarily a biblical question, but I start out with a question this morning. Have you ever been disappointed? Have you ever been disappointed? And the definition of disappointment is this: a feeling of sadness or frustration. Because here's the reasons why you feel sadness or frustration: because something was not as good or satisfactory as you expected, or because something hoped for did not happen. So when that happens, there's a level of sadness or frustration that arises because something wasn't as good as we thought it was going to be, or as satisfactory, or it wasn't what we hoped for. And so therefore it produces a disappointment in us. Disappointments happen when our expectations don't line up with our experience. When the picture in my head is not the picture I see before me. And I wrestle with this is what I thought and this is what I see. And therefore I start to feel something, and it's a level of sadness or frustration, and it's defined by disappointment. That's what we're feeling. So have we ever felt disappointed? And I know that there's different levels, and disappointments come in different sizes. I know when I was a kid that my grandmother would say, "Do you want some candy?" And you know, as a kid, you rarely turn that down. I mean, literally, I have my grandmother's candy dish after she passed. It was the only thing I asked for, was her candy dish. But I'll tell you what, I went to that candy dish as a kid and had a level of disappointment. Because, you know, as a kid, you know, I would almost rather have M&Ms, but without fail, there was Necco wafers in that. Now, as an adult, I don't mind some Necco wafers. You can push the button. But as a kid, who wants flavored of clove? Really, who wants that? You know, and three adults raised their hand in the congregation. There wasn't one kid saying, oh, give me some clove-flavored sugar. You know, it's just like, but now if I offered the M&Ms, there would be many more hands that would go up. But I can remember going to the candy dish and all those little green, chewy things that taste like, they're pink, they tasted like Pepto-Bismol, right? And I'm not even sure what they were, but that was the candy, Necco wafers, or those little pink and green candies that are kind of weird still to this day. But there was never an M&M, so there was a level of disappointment when I would go. And just so you know, if you're a historian, that the Necco wafers were given to the Union soldiers during the Civil War so that they could have some sugar in their pack, because just so you know, Necco wafers don't melt. Okay, just so you know, they don't melt. I mean, for crying out loud, licorice and cinnamon, you know, this is not a kid's candy. It's just not. There's a level of frustration, but disappointment goes even deeper, obviously, than just not getting your favorite candy at the candy store or your favorite candy from grandma's candy dish. Levels of disappointment can really go deep inside of us. And we can experience this level of frustration or sadness that really drives us toward the cliff, so to speak. Disappointment, a fleeting emotion or a powerful blow. A fleeting emotion, no thank you for the Necco wafers. A fleeting disappointment, a sadness because there wasn't M&Ms in there. But it can deliver a powerful blow as well in our life. And it can leave us kind of dazed and seeing stars at times. And it's not harmless. Disappointment is not harmless. It needs to be dealt with. And it's a gateway to other caustic emotions. And not only can I read this and study where disappointment, I can see it in lives of people where it starts out of being disappointed with something. And it's an caustic emotion that's risen up in them. An anger or a worry or a fear or a discouragement or despair has now taken root. It all started with a disappointment. It all started because what they had in their thinking wasn't what they were seeing in their experience. So that level of disappointment had escorted them into this fear or worry or anger or discouragement. We can't deal with disappointment. We need to deal with disappointment so that maybe we can bypass or get around or head off the fear and the worry, the anger, the discouragement, the despair. Maybe we just need to be less. Just expect less. Maybe we just need to expect less, and then we wouldn't experience so much disappointment. We can be disappointed by ourselves, and we can be disappointed by things around us. We can be disappointed by situations, and we can be disappointed by others that are in our lives. That level that I can see what I thought this was going to be, and it's not that. I want to focus in on being disappointed this morning, not by others or even by ourselves or about situations, but by others that are around us, those that we thought, those that we hoped for, those things that we wanted for someone else. And it's just not transpiring. They have not grabbed a hold of that. And now it's a disappointment, and maybe it's rising up in you as fear or anger. And we need to deal with the disappointment. Their actions are disappointing. How do I address the disappointment when it's caused by another person? When their actions are disappointing to me. Disappointment, a feeling of sadness. Again, the definition, if we can push the button, the definition of the feeling of sadness. The feeling of sadness or frustration. And Paul makes this very honest statement in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. That is why I wrote as I did in my last letter, so that when I come, I will not be made sad by the very ones who ought to give me the greatest joy. There are people in our lives that levels of disappointment sink deeper inside of us. And Paul says, I didn't want to be made sad or disappointed. And those that can breathe into me the greatest joy of all. Surely you know that my happiness depends on your happiness. There's a level of happiness that when I want you to embrace what can make you happy, and you're not embracing it, don't you know that affects my happiness as well? Don't you know that, Paul said? You have the power. You're something. I'm so close to you that you can make me sad. And you should bring me the greatest joy. I don't think he was pointing fingers. I think he was being honest. That there are all those people in our lives that are so close to us. And he said, I wrote this letter. I wrote as I did the last letter, and I think he might be referring to 1 Corinthians. But he's talking about those people, the sad, by the very ones that ought to bring me the greatest joy. And I wonder if those the closest to us, what about your spouse? What about your husband or your wife? Did you think it was going to be a little different than what it is? Did the guy riding in on a white horse all of a sudden change it for a donkey? How do you deal with that disappointment? How do you deal with a disappointment from your wife or to the husband? How do we feel when we were disappointed and they were parents? And even from our parents we receive. And I wish they would make better choices, even as my parents. I wish they would make better choices. Don't they know that they're happy? My happiness is kind of hinging on them too, that I feel something when they make poor choices. Don't you know that I'm dying? There's a disappointment that rises up in me when my kids choose poorly. Don't they know that when my grandchildren choose poorly, don't you know that that affects me as well? I'm disappointed. I want their actions. I want their actions to be better than they are. I had a picture of what this marriage or what parenting or what this friendship was going to be like. And it's not like that. Paul said, I had this picture of what it was going to be like, and it's not like that. My siblings or my friends, my child is or is not, my spouse, my wife is or is not, my husband is or is not, my parents are or they're not. And so we just get less expectant, right? It's just the way it is. That's one of my really grinds my teeth statements. It's just the way it is. Just shut up. You lower your expectations. And you lower your expectations for what a marriage is. Or you lower your expectation of how much you can accomplish as a mom or a dad. And you lower your expectations even as a son or a daughter. You lower your expectations as a pap or a grand or a grandfather or a grandmother. You just lower your expectations. This is what it is. Is that the way we handle disappointment? Just say that's what it is. Paul said, I wrote this letter to you before this. And if we go back through 1 Corinthians, and you just see in chapter 3, you see that they're walking in the world and not with God. That's disappointing when people would walk in the world and not with God. And he said in 1 Corinthians 5, kind of there's a sin that has been embraced. He said you need to deal with the sin, and that's causing him disappointment and sadness. I wish you would just deal with that sin. You ever had that feeling about a father or a mother or a husband or a wife or a child? I just wish they could get rid of that sin that was in their life. And it's just who they are. Hogwash. In chapter 6, he said, there's fighting inside the family. You ever get disappointed? Can you imagine? Some of you can imagine that when you go to a family gathering and somebody doesn't show up because there's fighting in there, and all of a sudden something happens to you. There's just this weight that you pick up, this bad taste in your mouth. And don't they know? I wish so much that everybody could just get along. I wish just so much we could spend some time in the house together. I wish just so much that my kids would get along. I wish so much that my parents would get along. I know that they're divorced, but for crying out loud, for my sake, can't they just get along? Apparently they got along one time. They created me. And 1 Corinthians 7 speaks of marriages and the roles of marriages. And 1 Corinthians 8 says, don't you care that your actions are hurting others? It's kind of a general assumption of what's going on in chapter 8. In chapter 10, you think you're okay, but you're not. They think they're okay, but they're not. And Graham sees it, and Pap sees it, and Mom sees it, and Dad sees it, and they think they're okay, but they're just not. Like, I just wish they would go to the mirror just once and just see they're not okay. My heart is hurt for them, Paul says. My heart is hurting for you. In 1 Corinthians 12 and 14 speaks about spiritual gifts. And I think Paul's saying, I see this potential in you. I see the potential. I see what the Holy Spirit wants to do. And you just keep resisting walking with God. 1 Corinthians 16 talks about financial choices. Just some very practical stuff. And he's disappointed because he's made sad. He's frustrated because these people that are the closest to him, that can bring him the greatest joy, the people that are in his circle, the people, he's not talking about the whole world here right now. He's talking about those people right in his circle, the people that have the greatest access to his soul, the greatest access to his heart, the greatest access to who he is.
Come on now.
In 1 Corinthians 13, he talks about love. And God showed me this week. He said that your love is not real. You're impatient with your kids. You're rude with your spouse. You're selfish. You're easily angered. And at times, you're downright mean. Paul says, I just want you to love each other. One, 2 Corinthians 3, back to the passage, he says, that is why I wrote as I did in my last letter, so that when I come, I will not be made sad by the very ones who ought to give me the greatest joy. Surely you know that my happiness depends on your happiness. how painful, listen to these words, how painful it was to write this letter. Heartbroken. I cried over it. I didn't want to hurt you, but I wanted to know you, how very much I loved you. This is not just a police officer, so to speak, pulling you over and giving you a ticket. This is me. My heart hurts. I wept over this letter. I wept over this feelings that I was having, a disappointment that what my picture was for you is not happening. I know that feeling real, real intense. I know that feeling as some new lifers. Well, I got a picture of what God could do in your life and what God wants to do in your life. And I see that you're walking away from God at times. And my heart is broken. Because no eye has seen and no ear has heard and no mind can conceive what God has in store for those who love him. So how do I love? How do I handle the disappointment that's in my life? How do I handle? Is it okay? First of all, is it okay to be disappointed in someone else's action? That's the question I just wrote on my notes. Is it okay for me to be disappointed, to be sad? Am I expecting too much? And I run through all of those things in my head. Am I expecting too much? Do I got to give more time? What do I do with this disappointment? Maybe you're dealing with the same thing with your spouse or your children or your parents. Are you heartbroken? Are you distressed because of the actions of someone else? I think it's certainly okay to be disappointed. But remember, disappointment is not a fleeting emotion. It's a powerful blow. It's not just a fleeting emotion. It can be a powerful blow. It is not harmless. It needs to be dealt with. It is the gateway to caustic emotions. I'm telling us, if we don't deal with the disappointment, we will become angry. And we would become distant. And we become less expectant. And we become without hope. And it'll drive us into the corner. We will become worried and fearful. So can we deal with the disappointment? How do we deal with the disappointment? And I like what Paul goes on to say in that 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 5 and 6. He says this, if anyone has caused grief, he has not so much grieved me as he has grieved all of you to some extent. He's pointing toward some entity, some action from somebody that has grieved him. But just so you know, it hasn't just grieved me. It's making an effect all over this family. Does that make sense this morning? And Paul recognizes it's not just me. Grand, pap, mom, dad, husband, wife, child, son, daughter. Can you just realize it's not just affecting you? It's affecting a lot of other people as well. And that's what Paul begins to understand. It's not just me, but I can see how it's affecting other people around me. I'm disappointed with the way my daughter or my son is acting, but just so we know, their actions now are producing actions inside of their marriage and inside of their parenting. And I can see the ripple effect of this. And I think that drives me to the point that I will not give up. I will not just sit in disappointment. I will not lower my expectations. I will walk in victory. And I want to know how to do that. And Paul says, you've got to realize that the impact is making on everyone. And he goes on to say in that passage, he says, grieved me as he has grieved all to some extent. Not to put it too severely, the punishment inflicted on him by the majority is sufficient for him. But then talk about punishment there. Look in verse 7. Push the button. Now instead of what? Instead of not expecting, now instead of now punishment, because now we just want to punish. Now we just want to bring a punishment. If you're in a marriage, you just want to bring a punishment now that your spouse has disappointed you, and now you're going to say, okay, you want some of that. And all of a sudden we get silent, because the silent treatment is great punishment. Or we bring on a punishment, resist doing something they want us to do, or intentionally pushing their buttons. Sometimes we intentionally push the button of our spouse. What is wrong with us? The one who had just vowed to walk with you all the days of your life through good times and bad. And when you get disappointed in their action, you start pushing their buttons. How is that working for you? He said that they'll be overwhelmed by excessive sorrow is what he says at the end of that verse 7. So that they will not be overwhelmed by excessive sorrow. We need to stop thinking we can cause positive change by making someone's life miserable. Are you with me? Paul says you're never going to bring about positive change by making their life miserable. Because what if they embrace that as well? And then all of a sudden you have a disappointment, so I make your life miserable. And then I'm disappointed in your actions, so you make my life miserable. And all of a sudden there's this big windy mess that's going on. But instead, he says, instead, in verse 7, you ought to forgive. We need to start with forgiveness. I find that very hard to do, and I'm not necessarily saying we need to go to the person, but we need to stand before God and say, God, I forgive my husband. We just need to stand before God. He says, you think that pushing their buttons is going to work? You think getting more angry than what they are is going to work? You think that's going to work? Let's just do this. You got a son, you got a daughter, you got a wife, you got a husband, you got a mom, you got a dad, you got a close friend. Let's just stand before God and say, God, I forgive them. Because I'm not going to be made sad, and I'm not going to be continued down this road of frustration, to continue down aggravation and down into anger. I'm just going to forgive. We need to deal with the disappointment. Yeah, Necco wafers, but forgive. Forgive. We need to just forgive. Stand before God and say, God, I forgive. Not forgive me. Forgive them. Does that make sense this morning? Just start out with forgiveness. Whatever it is. And maybe God will lead you one day to go to them and forgive. But I just wouldn't open up the one-liner with your spouse saying, honey, I just wanted to let you know I forgive you for being a donkey rider, not my white knight. That's probably not a good way to open up in a discussion. But I'm telling you, your heart can be made pure right in the presence of God. Because if you come out of the presence of God and you have forgiveness on your heart and not disappointment and not sadness and not frustration and not anger and not worry and not fear, but you stand now and forgiveness has saturated your soul, the next steps you make are going to be much more productive in your life. I think it's 100% okay to stand before God and say, I forgive my daughter or my son. I forgive my mom or my dad. Maybe your mom and your dad's not even with you anymore. I think you still can forgive them in the sight of God. And you can be freed from that junk and freed from that garbage that they have placed on you because you were expecting it to be different and it wasn't that way. And he continues there in verse 7 of that chapter 2. Well, he says, bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you have against one another. Forgive as the Lord has forgave you. Just so you know, you stand in his forgiveness. You have the ability. Not only can you, but you have the ability to forgive. And if you stand before God, let me just unpack this a little more. If you stand before God and say, God, I need to forgive them, and all of a sudden something starts to come to your head, forgive them for that too. And something else comes, forgive them for that too. Because God may have a laundry list for you to forgive them for, and you don't even realize how much you need to forgive them for, but you're going to forgive them because you have been forgiven. And it doesn't say, whatever grievances you have against each other, push the button. Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times do I have to forgive this dude? I love that question. 7 times. Now there, I'm going to shoot for once a day for a whole week. I'm going to forgive him. And Jesus answered, I tell you, not 7 times. How about 77 times? And just so you know, that's for the same offense. And just so you know, love keeps no record of wrong, so you probably shouldn't know what number you're on. Forgive. Forgive them. Forgive me. Please. If I am not the picture of what you think a pastor should be, stand before God and forgive me. I have no desire to make you disappointed or frustrated. Stand before God. Forgive us. And verse 7 goes back to say this. And now instead of whatever over here and all that anger and punishment and silent treatment and withholding all kinds of stuff, you ought to forgive. It's just a good suggestion. He said, I'm not forcing you to forgive. You ought to. You want to make a step in the right direction? Start with forgiveness. And you ought to comfort them. You ought to comfort them. You know what the word comfort means? It means to comfort them, means to draw them close. Draw them close. There seems to be some intention here of now breathing life into them. And now breathing life into them. Not the venom that you want to breathe, but all of a sudden you start speaking life. Just over them. Over their vehicle. Over their car. Over their workstation. Over their whatever workplace. You know, whatever. Just start breathing life over them. And just start asking God to bless them. When was the last time we just stand and just ask God to bless my spouse? Rather than just looking at the picture of how it's, I think it's supposed to be. But now that I am forgiven, see what happens when we forgive? All of a sudden we can start thinking about blessing. Unforgiveness, blessing is going to be very low on the scale. Start to breathe life into them. Start to give life. Just start breathing life. Just start calling out a blessing on them and breathe life into them. And please don't say, God, fix them, and then, see, you didn't do it, God. Seventy-seven times. Let's just start with that. But I think we can deal with disappointments in our lives if we can forgive, if we can give life to those that are around us. Look at 1 Peter 3:9 says, do not repay evil for evil or insult for insult. You ever been in an argument with your spouse and say, we probably really should shut up right about now? Because this isn't going too well. But you just kind of get, it's like throwing up. You ever think about throwing up? It's kind of disgusting, isn't it? But right in the middle of throwing up, said, I think I'm going to stop this. Just so you know, you ain't. In the middle of that, I just need to stop. Stop insulting, but with blessing, because you were called to that. Because you were called to that. That you may inherit a blessing. You see how that's symbiotic? Cyclical there. You were called to bless. You weren't called to spew venom. As a matter of fact, you don't look very good spewing venom. Verse 8 of that 2 Corinthians 2 says this, I urge you, therefore, to reaffirm your love for him, or now show him that you still love her. Now show her that you still love her. Now there's a time to start to express love. And how do I do that, God? How do I do that? I want to express this love. And how do I do that? And let God give you the ideas, right? It's God who's saying, if you want to deal with this disappointment, just start with you and I forgiving and then them. And then just start with you being able to breathe life into them and give them life through your words and just that encouragement, just if they receive it or not, not even in their presence sometimes, just calling it down from heaven and asking God to bless them. And then reaffirm your love. God, I do love them. I'm just so disappointed in where this has went, that I'm all upside down, sideways, and backwards. Can you give me just a way to reaffirm my love, to let them know I love them? And yeah, I'm only handing out Necco wafers. Because we got to deal with a disappointment, and we deal with it by loving them. Look at Proverbs says, it says this. It said, he who covers over an offense promotes love. But whoever repeats the matter separates close friends. Look at the power of love. So can you, he says, if you want to, you ought to forgive them and you ought to comfort them or speak life into them and you ought to love them. Just reaffirm that you love them. Can you do that? Can you do that? Watch the disappointment wane away. Verse 9 says, the reason I wrote to you was to see if you would stand the test and be obedient in everything. Act in obedience to the word. You want to know what the next thing that we can do when we have been disappointed? Push the button. Walk in truth. Just because someone else is messing up doesn't give you the reason to mess up. He said, I want you to still walk in the truth. Walk in the truth. Can you walk in the truth? Continue to walk out your faith. No matter what they're doing, no matter what's going on, no matter what's happening in your family's life, you continue to walk in truth. No matter how old you are or how young you are, walk in truth. Let's finish with this one this morning. If you forgive anyone, I also forgive him. And what I forgive and in what I have forgiven, if there was anything to forgive, I have forgiven in the sight of Christ. Don't you love that? I stood before God. I've already forgiven it in front of Christ. He's healed me. Now I can walk in victory. The disappointment, just so you know, you can continue to read Corinthians. It's not gone yet. Their actions are not gone yet. But he is different. He's got a different mindset. I have forgiven in the sight of Christ for your sake, in order that who Satan might not outwit us, for we are not unaware of his scheme. Do you understand what really who's driving the ship here, he says, and there's all this disappointment and aggravation and actions in your life, you can do spiritual warfare. Push the button. You can do spiritual warfare. You can overcome evil with good. You can overcome evil with good. You have the power to overcome evil with good. Walk in truth. Walk in truth. You have the power to overcome evil with good. You can do it. You can do it, no matter how old you are. Forgive. Give life. Walk, love. Walk in truth. And I wrote the whole ball of wax on some of them because I didn't want them at home because I don't really like them. I'm not keeping, just so you know, I kept the M&Ms. Forgive, give life, love, walk in truth, overcome evil. That's how we deal with disappointment. Don't let it drive us into anger and fear and worry How about a new lifers? Disappointment. Let me finish with this. During worship, I was wrestling. God, is this a message? I was wrestling with this message. I heard the enemy say a couple things to me. In worship, I heard the enemy say, I'm going to have your voice and you aren't going to be able to talk. Forever, I'm taking your voice. And I also heard God say, I said, I want to speak what you want me to speak today. Is this it, God? I was wrestling with that. Is this the message for today? Then all of a sudden I heard Tobin say, God, you've laid this on Ed's heart all week. And God says, did you hear what I said? This is the message for today. This is how we deal with disappointment. Don't let it drive you into the corner. Let it drive you into the presence of God. And don't expect less. Strive for more. Stand with me today. Father, I thank you. I thank you for these words that you spoke to me all week. Tobin was right. You melded these into me all week. And I've wrapped them into a 40-minute, perhaps whatever, 50-minute, I don't know how long I've been. But Lord, the words are out there now. And I pray that they would saturate us and we would no longer expect less from our wives or husbands, our kids or our grandkids, our moms or our dads, or our friends. We would not lower the expectation, but we would stand before you and forgive and breathe life into. And we would love them. And we would continue to walk in the truth. And we would overcome the evil that's so desperately trying to mess up our families. Father, thank you so much for that truth. Thank you for your heart for us. Father, we pray that that heart that we receive from you will just blossom in our lives. And I just thank you. In Jesus' name, amen. Have a great day.